Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, episode 44. Lower Decks, season 1, episode 8. Veritas.
Why are you doing this to me?
I need you to tell me that your senior officers are infallible heroes.
Well, they're not. And that's okay. We all joined Starfleet to dive headfirst into the unknown. We're explorers. Of course we don't always know what's going on. Did Picard know about the Borg? Did Kirk know about that giant Spock on Phylos? Did Dr. Crusher know about that ghost in the lamp thing from the Scottish planet that she hooked up with that one time? That whole thing. You clearly want us to say that the captain and her crew messed up, but we simply don't have the full story, and that's the truth. Whatever they did, I guarantee you it was all for good. You have shown no evidence that they're guilty of a crime. In fact, I find you guilty of trying to take them down with this sham of a trial. Drumhead!
I took a lot of notes because I was trying to get everything straight in my head because, you know, honestly, the first time I watched it, I was like, all those stories were just a whirlwind of nonsense. And yeah. In a way they were, but they made sense. They all fit together. And I think I was so distracted by all the chaos that I didn't put the simple bits together of why Klar, they were from K'Tuvan Prime. It's actually, what, K'Tuvan Prime?
Something along those lines.
K'Tuvan. So, and he said at the beginning, he was like, welcome primes or whatever. Right. So are they called primes? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, they did that to fuck with us.
They were calling them themselves
primes. They were trying to fuck with us.
Right, because like there's a lot of planets called something prime, yeah. You know.
Right.
So I was trying to follow his journey.
The long story short is we have a lot of notes. And that's great. I also took a lot of notes on this one, actually. I think it's fully justified having a lot of notes on this episode. Because you're right. There is a lot to unpack. And that's what we're going to do today on the newest episode of the It's Got Star Trek podcast. That's what you're listening to right now.
Mm-hmm.
Episode, what is it, Jesse? Which episode is it?
He's not going to know.
It's 40-something, right?
Yeah, that's right. Close enough. It's episode 44.
44, okay.
Excellent, 44. Last one was 43, as it happened. So this is episode 44. It's Got Star Trek, Lower Decks, episode 8. We're nearing the end of the season.
How many other 10?
There are 10 for the first season.
When did that become the standard? It's like 10 episodes.
There's 10 to 13 seems to be
Game of Thrones.
Where people are, well, even before that.
Well, The Expanse, there was 13 episodes for the first three seasons. And then the fourth season was when it got renewed on Amazon. And that was when
it's expensive.
Format.
You know, Picard had 10. I think even Discovery, I can't remember what the original order was because I know they expanded it. It might have expanded it from 13 to 15. But yeah, they've been shrinking the amount. 10's a round number. We use base 10, most of us anyway.
That's true. 10 fingers, toes,
yeah,
and so forth. Try some to people. Like do that in binary.
Base 60. Base 60 is some wild shit.
Why would you do base 60?
You know, for circles and degrees and you can do something with that, I'm sure.
Something. Yeah, I'm not complaining about that there being 10 episodes. I mean, it's crazy to look back at seasons of like TNG and see, oh, there's 27 episodes or whatever. Yeah, and I understand why they're less. They're more expensive to make. I mean, they're making fucking movies now, obviously.
And stressful, more work. Mm-hmm. More actual work, both for the actors, the writers, the producers.
So it's fine. And whatever they got to do, it's always just after 10. I just feel like 10 is just not quite enough. I want 13.
The good thing is they're already producing the second season. They're already writing it of Lower Decks, right? So while, you know, we will have to wait, in theory, we're hopefully getting higher level of quality in a more compact form, and the second season will be coming soon. It won't be like Better Call Saul or some of the other shows where we have to wait quite a long time. But
we'll still be able to do the podcast because we'll have something to talk about.
Yeah, we'll have something to talk about. We're always talking about all sorts of stuff.
The Orville,
we'll be talking about Discovery soon, I guess.
Yeah.
Orville just keeps getting, I mean, first it was because they went to Hulu, I guess, and then it was because of COVID. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but that's not something we discuss on the show, though.
No, I mean, we love COVID. I love the Orville.
Yeah, we don't discuss COVID.
Sorry.
Yeah,
we do try to avoid COVID.
You guys discuss the Orville a lot on this show, actually.
Yeah, but it's not like we're not going to be doing episodes about the
Orville. Right,
it's got Orville.
Fair enough.
Orville.
It's got the Orville.
Unless somebody made, you know, a compelling argument to do so. Anyway, this had Mr. Plopwood Smith in it.
Kurtwood Smith. Yes. Okay. Real quick.
He was good.
Let's do this properly, right?
Okay.
So, step one: Again, we don't like keeping people in too much suspense, so they can tune us out if they think we're shitheads. What did you all think of this episode?
I liked it. I thought it was great. I thought there was a lot going on. I thought it kept, I like the second time around, I definitely got more. It was a double watcher. I could even watch it a third time and probably still pick up some stuff.
Word, I did watch it a third time.
Oh, you did? I considered it and then I didn't. So I thought it was a fun play on that whole, you know, the whole trial thing. The whole there's that whole style of TV show where, you know, you get the people in the room and then whether it's a judge or the principal or the boss, and you sort of don't know why they're in there, right?
Right.
From the start. And
like
so
that
far,
episode of King of the Hill where they are volunteer firemen and burn down the fire station.
Exactly.
It's in media res.
Yes.
Is that
in the middle of the action?
In the middle of the stuff, yeah.
Oh, is that what the name of that style is?
It's a filmic term. Yeah. It's a term of art.
So, yeah. So,
and this, I'm sorry to just bust in there, but go on.
This episode
is different than previous episodes because we get it has a different structure like that.
Right. And where we don't know what even the problem is from the start.
That's right.
So we're learning
in the dark. Yeah.
Yeah. We're learning.
Just like they are.
Right.
And then, of course, they sort of. The other grand mystery that they add to it is that it wasn't even that situation to begin with.
Yeah.
So they kind of add that extra layer of mystery, which I thought was cool. So, and of course, you know, there were things that you, and whenever they do that thing where it's like, oh, well, you know, this person, that's two people. It was actually one person and you never knew because notice that those two people were never in the same room as everybody else at the same time, you know, that kind of thing. And you start to go back through the movie or show and are try to like, be like, huh, I guess they were never in the room at the same time. I guess you could reasonably say that there was some kind of, you know, shenanigans, twisty-roo going on, and it's supported by the action up to this point. This one, for the most part, there is, but there's a few things that they specifically call out and make it part of the joke. Of, like, where they're just like, they kind of make fun of that too, because sometimes when they do that, you know, you're just like, no, wait, that person specifically did something that would have given their position away. And so they kind of went with that and blatantly called it out at the end. Like, of course, the leech bucket.
Eels.
The eel bucket. It's like, why would they have an eel bucket at a party? I mean, I guess you could write it all off to different cultures.
But,
with like burners. They had burners at the bottom of that eel tank.
Yeah, to agitate the eels. Yeah, they added that later too, which
is
funny.
You're making these eels upset.
Yeah, you're hurting the eels. So,
I will say I not only enjoyed this thoroughly, I for me, it was maybe the best one of the season so far.
Mm-hmm.
I think for a couple of reasons, many of the ones that you cited. First of all, as Jesse noted, it's structured so that it's putting us in the position of the Lower Decks in that we know it as little as they do.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So there's nothing that's letting us in on what's going on in any of the individual stories or in the overall story. I also like that they played the whole thing for, you know, laughs, as you just described. They make us think it's one thing, this evil trial, and then they play it for laughs. But it still is that joke is still founded on the very Star Trek idea of don't judge, you know, be careful about being trapped in your lens from your perspective, you know, because other people do things differently. So it's so great that they were able to put in that message as part of a joke, not even in spite of the joke. It's foundational to the joke that's the joke is like, yeah, okay, I get, okay. And aliens do some weird stuff. And the other thing I really liked about it was that it, in addition to showing us their perspective, it showed the idea of exploration as being messy, no matter how competent you are, right? Again, that was part of the joke because you get Boimler of all people at the end having to sort of talk about, provide examples for when the senior staff has done really stupid stuff, which we can talk about in a bit because there was a lot of funny examples in there. But the message isn't that they're bad people. It's that the act of doing new things means you're going to make mistakes. And that's another great little message to get into, you know, a 23-minute animated show.
Yeah. Jesse, what'd you think?
It stands out as a different sort of episode structurally. It doesn't have the same kind of like A plot, B plot kind of thing that we have seen in previous
episodes.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of those where it's just straight on through.
And, you know, you get there's many episodes of Star Trek are built around this sort of courtroom thing. So that's a big.
Yeah, he even dropped the
big nod to that.
He dropped the proverbial horn of that joke didn't land.
The horn of candor.
He dropped the proverbial microphone, aka the horn of candor, and said drum. Oh, yeah, he said right. Drumhead, right. Which was a reference, direct reference to
Drumhead.
To Drumhead,
yeah, right. TNG. Drumhead. And TNG. I mean, and it's totally like the Klingon courtroom in like Star Trek VI.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
and that's come back again. That was on Enterprise. They had a similar one. I would actually
even,
say
even to like the thing that he like pounded on, yeah. Like his gavelly thing,
the sparky gavel.
For me, in an episode that, as I just said, I think is the best of the season so far, that was the only thing that I found mildly aggravating. I thought it was a little too derivative of the Klingon.
Yeah,
I mean, they did a lot of good jokes with it
because it was like they weren't Klingons. You're like, this is totally Klingon, but this guy's not a Klingon.
It was confusing me a little. Yeah. For the first little bit, I was a little confused. I knew they weren't Klingons, but I was wondering if there was some joke in why it was set up exactly like a Klingon thing, but that's the minorest of quibbles in the whole episode. I like that. It was like a Rashomon style story in a sense, where you're hearing different, you know, the stories from the different people.
Yeah, that was cool.
But even then, you don't have all the information. You know, you still need to have that
right
provided to you. And the other thing is, you know, since this did such a good job of really conveying the difference between the lower decks and the senior staff. You could see them thinking of maybe trying to do this kind of thing in the pilot, but it wouldn't have worked because it relied so much on knowing the characters, right? You need to be comfortable
now
with them. You need to have a little bit of understanding of how they're going to react and what their motivations are for the plot to make sense and for the humor to make sense.
Oh, speaking of characters, I don't know if this was a delayed joke or if this just sort of was whatever, but Ransom, near the end, he takes that salt vampire to the Casa de Ransom.
Yeah.
So it's like the Ransom House, you know?
I didn't think about that. Yeah, that is pretty kind of funny.
I don't know if that was meant to be a delayed joke or what. So the salt vampire being a reference to TOS.
TOS.
Not TAS, which there was a TAS reference.
Yeah, there's a TAS reference all over this place.
All over the place.
Why don't you cite it?
The TOS was the salt vampire, which sucks all the salt out of you to kill you. But then the TAS was the giant Spock from Phylos.
Yeah. Yeah.
Phylos.
The whole Rutherford bit is pretty great, and he keeps like waking up and weird shit happens. Like, are they pretending to be Vulcans or something? And
they okay.
Was it
a so Vulcan confusing museum this, they were trying to get into?
This took a couple views for me to understand.
Me too.
I'm right there with you, Dan.
That's
part of
the notes.
But it was rewarding.
They steal an old Romulan ship from the museum.
What I noticed on the second run through is, in order to steal the Romulan ship from the Vulcan Museum, first they steal a Vulcan ship.
Right.
Yeah.
So they steal a Vulcan, because that's a Vulcan design. Right. That's a classic Vulcan 24th century design ship.
It kind of reminded me of like a yacht or something when it was on top of the Bird of Prey. It was like some fancy looking. I guess their version of a runabout? Is that, or was it?
Sort of. I mean, because the Vulcans, they kind of have these smaller ships. They have some big ships too. We see more Vulcan ships in Enterprise than on TNG or DS9 and Voyager, but you do see some Vulcan ships, and they do look similar to this design with those little prongy things. But anyway, so the plot is that they have to steal a Vulcan ship in order to break into a Vulcan museum, like the Air and Space Museum.
Yes,
on Vulcan.
Yeah. That's how I put it in my notes,
right?
Too.
That's
and
what
then,
it looked like.
And then they get away with both the Vulcan ship and the Romulan Bird of Prey, which they use to infiltrate Romulan space in order to retrieve Klar.
And they took the map from those other guys so they could get into the neutral zone.
Yes,
right.
Exactly. Yeah. And
right.
That's why the captain was, trying to get that, you know, she might have stolen the map. I was trying to figure out if the implication was that she was lying, and in fact she did steal the map for the mission, and that's why the people were annoyed with her.
Yeah.
Or not. They didn't make that clear.
So Rutherford's team stole the ship, and then the Tendi's team
infiltrated
that he used the ship. Yeah.
So we
all that stuff about the scanning. They're scanning.
That was, I was laughing my
that
ass
was the most
that.
Rick and Morty that
oh,
this
when a new ship appeared every time.
And there was like the giant ones, and they're like this little thing going.
Yeah, the Darian Dix class.
Like, thank goodness we're a bird of prey, and you know, they just like appear out of nowhere surrounding them. Yeah. So yeah, they're
Romulan warbirds.
Those bug aliens, as Mariner referred to them, I think, was they were Twickets. I think
Clickets.
Twickets with a T, I think. I think it was Twickets.
Well, Memory Alpha said Clickets.
Okay, closed captioning said Twickets. Now
maybe closed captioning is better. It's a debate.
It's a toss up.
Clickets was kind of funny because it sounds like crickets,
mm-hmm.
and they're bug creatures.
Right? Oh, yeah. I guess that would make sense.
This is a good opportunity, actually, real quick, just to go over the notable guest stars. Right?
Oh, and their ship was a Twi'rk. It was called Twi'rk. The Twi'rk.
So maybe it is the Twi'kets.
I don't know.
That would make sense, because awesome. I do know it's the Twi'rk. Anyway, so the notable guest stars this week. First of all, the captain of the Twi'rk ship is notable. He is Kenneth Mitchell. And Kenneth Mitchell played a number of, you know, played like three different roles on Discovery. He played Cole, which he played in a number of episodes. Then he played Cole's piece of shit father.
Motherfucker.
Who's a complete piece of shit. Cole was pretty bad. And then he also played Tenevik, which is in Through the Valley of Shadows, which is where he gets to have some interesting interactions with Captain Pike. But the interesting thing is Kenneth Mitchell, he's been around for a while, and he recently announced that he had been diagnosed with ALS, and which has impacted his mobility, which has also impacted his acting career, because he played these big active characters. That was kind of one of the things he was known for. But it's cool that they had him as a voice here. I mean, this is like a, you know, it's a really cool opportunity to keep him in the Star Trek family, and I hope they use him again. I thought that he did a really great job as the, I know it's a small part as the Captain Twi'rk, but it's, you know, it was an engaging scene, and I thought the voice acting that he did was really good. He also follows us on Twitter, so we think he's awesome.
Super cool.
And just for that.
Super cool.
All right.
John DeLancey, of course.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Of course. Special guest star.
And like, what was one of the funny things was at the end when Mariner dismissed him, it's like, we don't got time for this shit, all right? Yeah. He wasn't even phased. He wasn't even like, oh,
he just followed him down the corridor, like
nothing. He didn't sound desperate at all. He just sounded like Q, but then of course he sounded a little desperate.
Sort of, talking about Picard, he was like, all he does is make wine.
Oh, yeah. They made the reference to all that people go to Earth for or something is all that's on Earth is vineyards and soul food.
Yeah, soul food.
Which is a reference to TNG and DS9.
Yeah, yeah. Captain Sisko's dad's restaurant.
Yeah.
But, of course, John DeLancey requires no additional,
He had a small part in Breaking Bad briefly.
He did. He was good on that. Yeah, but finally,
he was. Oh wait. He was also. He's known among the Brony community as one of the.
Is he one of the ponies?
Something. I don't know. Either a pony or he's one of the non-pony bad guys or something.
Both of his parents were oboists.
Oh, wow, that's crazy.
And still, he had a successful career.
He still seemed to have a normal life. After
oboe.
That.
They've never touched the bassoon. That's why.
Mm-hmm.
Just kidding. Bassoon's great.
So finally, of course, the most important, brilliant guest star of all was Kurtwood Smith. It was really, really cool to see him.
Just freaking out
that
the whole time.
That makes it the most Star Trek.
It is super Star Trek to have Kurtwood Smith, because he played Klar, so he had a big part in this episode.
And he was acting like he was angry the whole time, and it seems like he's angry because they're not giving the info he wants, but really he's just getting more and more frustrated because they're ruining his birthday part, or his part regular, not birthday, but
exactly.
His party.
It makes sense.
So he's getting really sad.
So, real quick, so Kurtwood Smith, most people will know who he is, of course, but just for Star Trek, the Star Trek bona fides, played the Federation president in Star Trek VI, mm-hmm. which we discuss in episode 20 of the podcast.
Yep.
He played
in RoboCop.
Odo's predecessor Thrax in Things Past, which we talk about in episode 23
of the podcast.
And he played Anorax in the Voyager two-parter Year of Hell.
Mm-hmm. We talked about that one, too.
And we talked about that in episode 22.
We're big fans.
We talked about all of those Kurtwood Smith appearances in that sequence.
Pretty much. It was close. It was episodes 20, 22, and 23. You need some Kurtwood Smith, it's this episode and 20, 23, and 22. Of course, as Jesse mentioned, Clarence Boddicker in RoboCop, he was Red Foreman in that 70s show. He was on that weird episode of X-Files called Grotesque, where he played like some kind of...
Isn't he in Dead Poets Society?
He was in Dead Poets Society.
Did he play a bad guy?
He played the bad dad.
Oh, bad dad.
He played you know what? If you watch that movie, I don't think the dad's not that bad in that movie.
The bad guy is Robin Williams.
Yeah, he might have been the bad guy.
Yeah, Robin Williams is like telling his kids, it's like, don't give a shit about anything.
Yeah.
It's funny how you get older and you're like, you know what?
That movie ruined English
teachers. Ferris Bueller was a piece of shit.
Yeah, he was.
Ferris Bueller was a bad person.
He was mean to everyone.
He was a shithead.
He sucked.
Anyway.
So
he was also Kurtwood Smith was also on Rick and Morty once. On the Get Schwifty episode, he played the general who wanted to bomb the alien heads.
So Mariner's story, it starts with Rutherford tries to tweak the red alert so it's extra loud, but instead he makes it extra soft.
Yeah.
And so at first I was thinking, so this is, keep in mind, this is sort of a first watch through kind of thing, because I'm trying to figure, there's so many things, like, I don't know if you couldn't classify them as red herrings because they had a purpose, but things that could be construed in different sort of ways. Yeah. So, like, for one, would Rutherford really make that mistake? You know, of like trying to make the red alert loud, but instead he accidentally made it too soft. Is that something that Rutherford would do? I always thought that he's pretty competent.
Maybe not, but we did have the recent episode where he goofed up the transporter a little bit. Like, he was trying to make it better,
but he ended up saving the day.
He made it better, but kind of funky.
Yeah,
he is the talented person, but who gets a little ahead of himself.
Yeah. Okay. Right? That's a good way of putting it.
And I think that's also very relatable to probably a huge chunk of the Star Trek audience, you know, when you're just a little over eager and you don't take all the boring steps.
And they have to sneak onto the bridge because they have bridge duty, but like it turns out like they're the guys like sitting up front.
They're sliding into their console seats all sideways.
Right. So when I first saw the red alert thing, I thought, oh well, this will come into play. Like, they're gonna try to cover up the fact that he screwed up the red alert because he had a well-meaning gesture, but like they were like, we don't want to get him fired, so maybe the whole foil of this whole thing is they're going to eventually have to admit that he broke the red alert. And, you know, that was just like as I'm watching, I'm thinking, is that what it's going with?
There's all this stuff that they think that they're goofing up, but only they know about all this stuff that they did. So they're all nervous about it.
Right. So after I thought that, I started thinking like, well, maybe this was just totally, this was on the first viewing before I knew what they were going for the episode. I thought, well, maybe they just threw that out as just unimportant nonsense, just to lead you off the case. But really, it was, I think, just something as sort of benign as they just wanted a reason for them to be late and not know what was going on, and therefore not be able to sort of, the whole thing was of course centered around them not knowing what was going on and being able to tell them. And then so those twickets or whatever, clickets or whatever they were called,
twickets.
So it began with
click it or ticket.
It began with
that means if you don't click your seatbelt, you will get a
That's what happens
ticket,
in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
A moving infraction.
It's a click it or ticket in Virginia.
We were in New Jersey. We were on a side road in New Jersey, and there was construction, and then there was one of those digital signs, and all it said was, be prepared for sudden aggravation. And so... I swear.
Oh my God.
That was like the best sign.
Do you think it was hacked, or is that
New
just
Jersey.
The...
This was back in late 80s, early 90s.
You could hack stuff
back
then. Yeah,
I guess it's probably not that.
You could call up a phone and whistle into it and get long distance.
You're lucky to get a pretty clever hacker like that who didn't just write penis butthole or something, you know.
It's true. It is a rare confluence of the hacking skill and the cleverness of the
it's
hacking
just about
humor.
Whistling into the payphone?
You used to be able to whistle in because the old payphones operated on tones.
Tone.
And
you could do that thing where
box.
You hang up three times and then make it ring back at you forever.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So we briefly
real quick for people out there, a payphone was a phone that was attached to a wall in public, and you could put U.S. currency in it and make a phone call.
For a long time, it was a quarter, and then towards the end there, they upped it to 35 cents,
and then they upped it to 50.
So you had like had to have a quarter and a fucking dime.
Yeah, that was bullshit.
That's what killed it.
50, yeah,
that and cell phones.
Oh yeah!
I remember when cell phones were just on the in-between phase, and I hadn't gotten one yet because I was late. And I remember trying to look for a payphone, couldn't find one, and then it was craziness. We used to just be able to use payphones. Anyways,
they were everywhere.
So we briefly touched over the fact that there was a misunderstanding over this gratitude thing, and we never really resolved that, because Freeman's like, they just attacked me for thanking them, and they're just like, this injustice will not stand. We gave you the map and now you turn on it. She goes, I simply showed gratitude for the map. And he goes, gratitude? How dare you? So the question is, was this the classic, you know, different cultures have different expectations, and her form of gratitude came off as an insult to them? Or was it simply that the concept of gratitude was insulting to them?
Yeah, it could be the latter. Like I said, to me, it was not super clear, but it sounds to me like they gave her the map. They did say they gave her the map. You reminded me of that. So,
and So I mean, it was just kind of interesting that they had that whole sort of fight back in there. But I guess that was also supposed to be sort of to put you in the shoes of the lower deckers who came in and didn't know what was going on. And then there was the whole skit with Mariner, like Captain asking Mariner what to do, and then Mariner's like, "I think you know what to do." And she's like, "Yeah, that's right. I'll ask Boimler," you know. And then they all shit on Boimler because he's talking about a great. Crazy. He's talking about impulse engines to do a crazy Ivan. Yeah, I don't know that reference.
Yeah, the crazy Ivan is a reference to a previous. Is that the one where? Is that from the episode where Wesley is at Starfleet Academy and does the illegal?
That's not a crazy
a
starburst. Ivan.
A crazy Ivan, something different. Anyway, yeah. Crazy Ivan, we'll remember.
Is it like a purple Herman?
Purple. What's a purple Herman?
It's sort of like a Dutch oven, but you know, more intense.
Wow. And then I don't know if we know what the evasive maneuver 88 or 84 is, if that's even anything.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
And then they all.
I did like. Is he fucking serious?
Yeah, they Shax, Ransom, and Freeman all were just like, "Oh man, you suck." And then there was the misunderstanding. This was all about communication, like lack of communication. It was basically the overall theme. Is it overarching? I often tend to say overarching. I like the arc, but I guess it could be both.
I think overarching, but yeah. Overarching probably works.
I just don't want to sound stupid.
It's the same root, an arc and an arch.
There's a
route. Same route? No, root. You meant root.
I meant root.
Yeah. Or route.
Or, oh shit. So the communication aspect was like, she was like, "Send him a message." And so she's like, "Yeah, I got you." And then shoots at him. She's like, "No, invite him to dinner." And so there was another sort of instance of like, when you send someone a message, it's like, it's always talking about, you know, fire a shot off their port bow or whatever, you know.
Well, and the whole, the episode was titled Veritas, right? Which is means truth, right?
Yep.
So
well, there you go.
And at the, throughout the whole episode, I mean, you're on a good line there because it's also the misunderstanding with Tendi, where that was more where she was too shy to overcome the realization that she was not, you know, that she was not supposed to be on that mission, that they got confused and brought her along.
I like all the cat jokes they have on this show, and they're like, she's like,
cleaning
she's
up
like
the
cleaning
cat,
the cat fur off.
Yeah, she's like, "You need to shave that." Yeah. Or
she's like, "This is where Billups sits."
Yeah, she had that roller, that lint roller that I've used on a.
Yeah.
When they were doing the Tendi thing about the cleaner, I was immediately thinking of that old thing about, you know, the Vipers coming, the Viper. Mm-hmm. You ever that sort of, there's a G.I. Joe episode about it, but it came from somewhere earlier. Well, the Viper, the joke in the Viper was that by the end, the person's like, "I am the window Viper. I have come to Viper windows." And so it was a whole, because the whole episode, they're of course preparing for like some Viper evil guy to come. And I don't know. I assume that doesn't originate with G.I. Joe, but anyway, so that's what
Wait. Puns don't originate with from G.I. Joe?
No,
sure?
I meant that particular one. That specific one. G.I. Joe invented puns.
Now
so,
I know.
So
I
can believe that whole cleaner thing, it's like, oh, she's clean. She's a cleaner of the room. But really, she's like some kind of secret agent or undercover cleaner, which at first she assumes and I assumed is like means you beat ass. But apparently she's just supposed to be the getaway driver. I don't know.
Yeah, she just was supposed to get them beamed out.
Yeah, and somehow we learned that Tendi knows how to whoop some ass, I guess. Yeah.
We also know she likes eating ice. That's like my daughter. I've been replicating a lot of ice.
Yeah.
My daughter just loves ice. She loves the fact that we have one of those automatic ice machines and she's just getting bowls of ice and eating it. Crushed ice.
I do that a lot when I worked at a restaurant. I would always just spit on my hand and reach in the ice bin and then rub it on my face and then eat it and then spit it, vomit it back out into the ice bin. No, I wouldn't do that. But I would chew on a lot of ice.
Which restaurant was it?
Dan, Dan, in his prior career, only worked at very high-class restaurants. And that's not a joke.
Mannequins.
Yeah.
That is, in fact, true. Slauncher.
Started at Chili's, though.
Yeah. Well, that's a form of high-class. Depending, you know.
Yeah. So, but I like to chew on ice too. And I met this dude who, and he was saying, like, watching people chew ice makes me want to, like, kill myself. And so,
himself? Did you successfully get him to murder himself?
I don't know. I got fired from that place. Oh, no, yeah. I quit. No, I quit that place. I stopped showing up.
six of one, half of the dozen, half a dozen of the other.
Yeah. So, Tank of Contempt. We don't have maps. We have stellar cartography.
Yeah, that was good.
I did. Okay, so
that was the origin of the neutral zone map, and then Klar is like wants the neutral zone map, and so it's just like, okay, he wants a neutral zone map.
That's, yeah, you know. Or he wanted to talk about it, but that's where there was a clue, right?
There was. I think you're. Yeah, go ahead.
Because he said, "Describe these wondrous events."
Exactly.
And in retrospect, you're like, yeah, okay. He's already laying. That doesn't make any sense. You know, it's not even like an evil guy thing to say necessarily.
Right,
you know,
wondrous.
It slips under there the first time you're watching it, but yeah, it's like you start getting those little clues.
I remember the first time I saw it, I was thinking like, okay, that was weird, but nothing occurred to me. Like, it wasn't weird enough for me to think about it, yeah, more than once. Yeah, so they got a tank of eels at a party to throw people into.
I love the tank. I loved everything with the eels. My favorite line in the whole episode was, "You may go uneeled for now." I want that to be a word I can use. Uneeled.
Uneeled.
I'm going to contrive a scenario in real life where I can use that term unironically.
You should get to work on that, because I really think that you can come up with something. I think you're pretty good at stuff like that.
I think I just need to get
a
bunch
of them words.
I think I just need to get a bunch of eels and start using it as a form of punishment for my children.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't really know how to punish them these days, other than saying, like, you can't have internet, and then forgetting to turn it off.
But then your punishment has a punchline.
Yeah, exactly. I think if it's creative, it's okay. And it's not really a punishment.
It's not abusive then.
Well, they'll also be learning about eels.
Yeah. That's how
it's hands-on.
How much can you really learn about eels from that experience?
That's some hands-on learning.
Here's a fact about eels that you might be interested in. No one knows exactly how they breed. No one's seen them breed.
That's fascinating.
They seem to go, there's eels, they seem to like go into like the Sargasso Sea or something and have a breeding frenzy and then come back pregnant.
See.
But people do not fully know the life cycle of the eel.
See, now that's something where you can come up to someone and say, here's something you might not know. Unlike those articles that, it's like, I read one recently that had like 20 things that you forgot about happened in the 80s. And one of them was like, the Thriller video came out. It's like, motherfucker, nobody forgot that the Thriller video came out.
It's
in
an
the
insulting clickbait. It's not just clickbait, it's insulting clickbait.
Exactly, it's insulting. Exactly. But no, yours was good, though.
Yeah, the eel thing is interesting.
I mean, you're jumping out, you're going out on a limb when you say that, but it is, you know.
I can't make a pun off of limb and eel, but Lemiel.
Lemiel?
I can recommend to the audience out there, go look up eel reproductive
eel
information.
Sex. Don't look up eel sex, you'll get something.
Yeah,
totally
yeah. Okay,
gross.
No, good point, Dan. Do not type in eel sex in just a standard thing. Go to Wikipedia, maybe. You might be okay.
You could do eel sex in Google, but don't do it in Bing.
No, don't. Even in Google, definitely don't do it in Bing. Don't do it on Google. Don't do it on YouPorn either.
Or RedTube.
I mean, you'll learn a lot about the world if you do that search, but you might not want to know about that world.
Is that a part of the world you really need to know about?
But, yeah.
It's one of those Pandora's box.
The eel stuff was fun.
Are you being eel with me right now?
I ain't eeling it right now.
You have a license to eel. That's an eel illness. I'm coughing. I got an eel. That's an eel illness you got right there.
Are you for eeling me?
Yeah. Are you for eeling me? I like how he said that there was another example of him being spooky and misleading when he gave the star dates. He was like 5, 7, 7, 9, 1.1.
4.
I want to know how these star dates match up, but I don't think I'm ever going to get around to caring that much.
Yeah. Somebody on the internet, please do that for us.
Yeah.
And if you already have, please make us aware of it, because we don't want to go look for it.
Remember the bit when it's one of the Rutherford bits, and he's like in space in the spacesuit, and then like Billups has an issue with his spacesuit, and he's like said like something about like Mark Twain's got a gun.
Yeah. I couldn't quite tell, even on the second watch, it sounded like he was maybe saying, Tasha, there's a trash bag behind you.
Yeah, he did. He did. He said, Tasha, there's a trash. So that was that.
Was it a reference to Tasha getting eaten by the slime guy?
Yeah, it was, Tasha, no, the garbage bag is behind you. That's got to be a reference to, how she left us.
How she left us.
Oh, at the beginning, speaking of Rutherford, at the beginning, they, Clara was like, speak, when the horn of Candor came down, he says, speak only the truth.
Yeah.
And Rutherford goes, happy to be here. That's pretty good.
The other thing about the Candor, right, is like horn of Candor, horn of Candor. Okay, horn of telling the truth, right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then I thought of absolute candor.
Yeah.
And then I thought of absolute condor.
Oh, boy.
As in,
here
like, absolute, you know, citron, but vodka made back with condor in it.
Back at this one again. You made that journey while you watched that.
I made that joke way back in the Picard days. Probably during the episode Absolute Candor. I don't remember which podcast episode that was.
It was a good enough joke to make again, though, because there's people that probably didn't hear it the first time around.
Yeah, but now they can go back and listen. We have how much content? Sorry, how much?
What? That was weird.
We have a lot of content. We've provided so much content.
It's like
there's a lot of content in the back catalog to go look through.
Totally.
It's like Wii U had Breath of the Wild and other games that they re-released on the Switch, and there's no problem with that because nobody played the Wii U. Precisely.
Know.
I mean, that's not the same thing because everyone listens to all of our old episodes.
That's true. Most everybody listens to it because otherwise they're missing out on some pretty interesting, serious,
pretty
clever, humorous stuff, right?
So they gave him the updates. He had to do the updates so he could get Romulan flight manuals and repair info. So right there, you know, they're stealing a Romulan ship. So we still don't know what they're doing with it. Then he talks about, like, the Denobulan flesh-eating virus on his peen.
He's a peen.
And so I was wondering, I mean, why would they... Flesh-eating virus? I know that Phlox had all... Who's a Denobulan, had all those creatures... That he was, you know...
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily. He had all those creatures in his med bay to, like, you know, get all the good stuff from him. And I don't know if that was any kind of sort of vague, stretch reference.
Just disease.
Yeah, just
make
disease.
Make him a disease. And it's funny because it eats away your penis.
Yeah, why'd they pick Denobulans, though, you know?
I mean, this is, you know, it's 2020. A disease that eats away your penis is hilarious.
I would think Phlox would have something like that, you know?
Yeah.
And he's probably married to
in his lab, and he suffers from it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he's constantly regenerating his penis.
Oh, so he can do that. That's pretty... Can he regenerate?
I don't know.
They're all married, right? Like, there's a few degrees of separation between all of the...
Yeah, Phlox has, like, 4 or 5 wives, and then they all have different husbands and stuff. So it's complicated but entertaining.
Rutherford is rotating the EBS capacitors. I don't know why they can't rotate themselves, but he said a little song. He said a little song. It was rotating all day long while singing my rotation. And then he got interrupted. And then he goes, "Hey, sirs, you want to rotate with me? Maybe sing a little song." I thought that was... They still did the rhyme. They still put the rhyme in there.
So. I really enjoyed that his... And I know we've seen a little bit of it before, but we saw the most of it in this episode where he has the Elkar's interface in his brain. You know, so when he reboots, like, everything he's... From his viewpoint, you're seeing all the Elkar's data and shapes.
I like the Gorn Wedain.
Yeah,
he wakes up in a Gorn Wedain.
And they're all biting on him, and he thinks if he restarts, it'll go away, and he just comes back. He's like, "Nice try, Gorns," and then comes back. And he's like, he's more like clawed up, and they're still like the Gorn chick is like biting on him. And like...
So the part of the episode that I'm not going to take a stand against, because there's no reason to take a stand against something, but I was like wondering.
That's a defeatist attitude. He means that for everything out there. For
everything at this point. Not even at this point, forever. Since the beginning. I didn't know if I thought, I didn't, the whole thing with the, when they were in the Vulcan Air and Space Museum, and that when Shax, it was like such a bit when Shax was doing the "don't draw any attention," and the guy's like, "Hey, don't, what are you doing there? You're drawing my attention." He's distracting with the fan dance. And he's like, "Stop that. Now you're distracting me." Although I did like when Rutherford goes, "Oh yeah, feels good. Feels right." But that whole bit right there, and he's holding the feathers.
It was an American Dad joke. That was the style of humor. I agree with you. And that little chunk.
Okay. Oh, I thought you were saying it was a direct reference to American Dad.
No. This show has forged its own voice, but it does have immediate comparisons to Rick and Morty, for one. Now, with a completely different underlying tone, but similar to that. Solar Opposites, if you've seen that, that's the one that Mike McMahon co-created with Justin Roiland. And so there's some similarities in vibe there as well, and as well as to some other things, but mostly to Star Trek, by the way. Mike McMahon has really imbued this with Star Trek, with, you know, sort of using the hints and structures that come from some of these other shows. But that scene was straight out of, like, as if it was Roger the Alien, you know, getting up to something. Yeah. And then some guard being like, "Hey,
yeah, right.
You've caught my attention." Mm-hmm. That kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. And so I don't know if it really fit for me. I don't know if that really works for me. If they could just retcon. So I don't know. It was weird. It felt a little out of place and strange. I don't know. Maybe that's what it was. It's because it works in other scenarios, but it felt a little bit in a weird direction.
I agree. For me, it worked in the sense that it was funny. So And a lot of times when you're a writer, it's not always the right decision, but a lot of times it's like, do what makes the sense for the story, and or what's funny or what causes tension or whatever. We see this all the time in Star Trek where they go against canon or slightly adjusted or something because they want to tell a specific story, and if they relied too much on the way things were, they, you know, they need to make little adjustments. It's not always the right decision. It's a judgment call.
Yeah, they did want to show that's a good point, where they did want to show the scene where they had to actually get the bird of prey, and so what is going to sort of get in their way there, and what it's like when a lot of shows, they have to end every before every commercial break, they always have to end on a little joke or something, you know, or changing scenes. They often cartoon, like all, a lot of cartoons, you know, Simpsons is a perfect example. We're always trying to end on a joke. And so they want to sort of, you know, keep show you the story, like you said, I guess, but also keep it entertaining. So they just put a little weird, what's that called? The back in the day humor, the, when the people wore, bustiers and it was
burlesque.
Burlesque.
Yeah. Maybe it was like a burlesque kind of
bustiers. I knew exactly what you were talking about.
I knew what you're talking about.
Well, if a similar plot was happening in the hour long version of Star Trek in a non-comedic dramatic version, they would have been stealing this at night. Right. I think that's the difference. You know, you create the humor by having them do it at a point that's going to require them to, you know, unless it's open 24 hours or however many hours it takes to rotate on Vulcan.
They would have probably done it at night, and there would have been some guard that sees them, and then they would have a little tiny shootout or something like
that. Yeah. Or they'd have to, you know, Vulcan neck pinch him or.
Or there'd be some kind of thing that's going to make a lot of noise, and they have to figure out how to turn it off.
Make some noise.
Make some noise. Gorn wedding. That's funny. That's good stuff.
I like the Gorn wedding.
Although I don't know why that bird of prey, when they landed on that bird of prey, this is right before, why it decloaked for some reason, and then it recloaked again. I guess that was just to show you that it was a.
Yeah, I guess so. But then it led to that, you know, the Tendi, when it got into this Tendi storyline, which first of all was hilarious, how she got into that situation.
So up to
it
this...
wasn't like, that's the same ship from my story.
Yes.
So up to this point, we know that they stole a map of the neutral zone.
Or they obtained a map.
They obtained a map of the neutral zone, and they stole a Romulan bird of prey. That's what we
know. They stole a Vulcan ship and then used that to steal a Romulan bird of prey.
Yeah. Which is pretty, like you said earlier, it's pretty funny. But that's the as far as actual relatable plot, that's what we have, is we have a Romulan bird of prey and a menu. Neutral zone.
Neutral zone menu.
Yeah.
I'll have the Camp Khitomer Accords.
Ah!
That doesn't make any sense.
That's enough.
So it was funny how Tendi got involved, first of all, you know, because she was excited to clean the conference room. That scene was cute. I also thought it was cute that Mariner was disappointed. She was like, oh, I never get to clean the conference
room. Yeah, when she was all like, I don't care.
Pretending not to care, but, you know, a little hint that she did. Then Ransom busts in with all his buddies. Ransom appeared coked up this entire episode. Like, at least during that mission, not for the whole episode, but in that mission, I mean, they were doing stuff with his eyes, and his guys were all broing out, and they had their redacted. I like the little redactions over their eyes. And Kurtwood Smithers like, are you really willing to risk death by eels in order to keep business? She's like, yeah. And he was like, okay.
That was one of those blatant plot holes of like that they referenced at the end of. He straight up says like, are you willing to risk death? Yeah. And it's like at a party, like you're going to, I mean, maybe throw him in the pit of eels to rough him up a little bit, but you're going to fucking kill him at a party.
But at the same time, it's
like
also
a Dothraki party.
It makes sense in retrospect, because now that we know that he was trying to demonstrate, in fact, how honorable Starfleet officers were, the fact that he did not put her to death in the eel tank actually makes sense, because at first it's almost played for comedy, which is he asks her that question, she says yeah, and he's like, all right, keep going.
Oh, so you think he was just testing her?
And not testing her, but I think it he didn't mind, because it actually helped prove his point. It proved his point that they are so serious about their job that he, even under the threat of eels, she would not reveal the information. I did also like the gag where the majority of the time when they were bleeping the words, you still like could hear them.
Neutral zone, beep, own.
The very last time that Ransom says, he's like, Rom you, beep, lands.
Yeah, and then at the end, it's sort of the, I think where that culminated is, of Tendi mixing mixing the redaction beeps with the censor beeps because
yes.
So it's pretty good. And then that goes, like you said, with the, it's funny to, it's funny the idea of telling a story and sort of having black bars over people's eyes while you're telling a story. How would that be implemented? It's crazy.
It's completely insane.
It's completely insane.
And that's what Ransom thought of Tendi after she kicked the shit out of all those Romulans. Oh, by the way, another great line was those two Romulan guards walking along. It's like, you know who I really hate? Remans. And they're like, oh, they're the worst. That was pretty good. So yeah, that was cool, that whole segment, right?
I like Remans. It when the cat was on the wrong ship. And then it was
oh, yeah.
They had like a Boimler with like wings.
He looks like Baxter Stockman.
Yes, that's right. Oh, thank you. I was trying to remember. I was like, what does he remind me of? He does. He reminds me of Baxter Stockman. That whole segment at the end where Boimler is providing these examples of goof-ups. The puzzle was so ridiculous, and I was just tickled. And I imagine that's what a bored Q does after Picard, after he can't get at Picard anymore.
The soccer ball was singing about positrons.
It was a puzzle. It was puzzles. It was puzzles. I think. I think he was saying puzzles.
Really? I thought he was saying positrons.
No, he was saying something about puzzles.
It was like
that would have been more Star Trek if it was positrons.
It was. You're right. Rewrite.
Maybe I should turn the volume up when I watch the show.
Stop keeping it at mute. Inside baseball. So what, it was like a chess piece against, they weren't just cards, they were diamonds. They were all diamonds.
Yeah, and they were playing cards that were shuffling cards.
Oh, yeah, threateningly. Right.
So they were giant playing cards, threateningly shuffling playing cards on a chessboard, and then the soccer ball character shows up at one point and starts talking about, you know, can you solve my puzzle, humans, or whatever. I forget exactly what he said.
For some reason, I have the quote, this is where Billups sits, and I don't know what
that's when Tendi is cleaning. She's referencing after the mission, she went back to the conference room to finish cleaning it, and she's cleaning Bill, and she's like, this is where Billups sits.
And then Kurt Smith is like, no, it's not, or something like that. It's she's like that no, can't it be is. True. Yeah.
So now, can she kick total ass, or do you think she was just making that up for the story? I think she can.
I think she can, because, you know, Ransom and all of them were there. There's nothing that would prevent anybody from being an Orion person. I mean, we know Orions are pretty violent or whatever.
You know, that's funny, because those Remans are really, when you look at them, they're really easy to hate on, because they're so, they're like vampires.
I don't like the Remans. I don't like the concept of the Remans. It's one of my problems with Nemesis. I think they missed out on some pretty cool opportunities by making the Remans into some Nosferatu monsters.
Right. That's exactly what they were. That's all they were, is Nosferatu monsters.
It's like, come on. Let's do something more interesting with that. The idea of a Romulan underclass is great. It would work better if the Romulan underclass were more sympathetic and didn't come across as monsters.
That's what I forgot. I forgot that, because it's been a while. I forgot that the Remans were a Romulan underclass. That's what makes it funnier.
Basically, they did all the mining and stuff, you know. But anyway,
he made the joke about hating the Remans.
Exactly, and I think they know a lot of Star Trek fans are not hugely keen on the Remans. No offense to the Remans themselves; it's not their fault.
You were part of an unfortunate sort of.
They
creation.
Were created. Yeah, they were created by a madman.
Yeah,
the guy who wrote Gladiator.
Impossible! Human lies. So,
Boimler, we were talking about all the Boimler stuff at the end, where
real quick, at this point, they went down and they kicked ass and they got the package. The whole point of getting the Romulan ship. The whole point was getting the neutral zone map is so they could guide themselves through the neutral zone with the Romulan ship to go down onto...
So Ransom and his bro team could go get the coffin.
The coffin package.
The space coffin.
Space coffin. Now, where did they go? I can't even remember where it is they went to get the coffin. Like
It was on Romulus.
It was on Romulus.
They went to Romulus.
Right, because they
Romulus is the capital. Because
it was kind of weird. They actually did the thing where they announced where it was through the Romulus, capital world of the Romulan Star Empire. I thought that was kind of out of place, but not in bad way. It was just kind of like a little bizarre.
And they've done that before. They use it sparingly on Star Trek, but you know, in Deep Space Nine and TNG, they do occasionally use it. Camp Khitomer or something like that.
Yeah, and it's always it fits. You know, to do it in something like that, where you're just like, oh yeah, that's it, to announce where you are and stuff, and give you some sort of perspective,
If it's ambiguous, you know. Although this was pretty clearly Romulan architecture, but you know,
it was just kind of funny that Lower Decks did that, because they haven't really done that. They haven't set that pattern yet. Yeah. Of doing that stuff. So,
and again, to be fair, Star Trek itself never necessarily they did that sometimes, but not other times. It just sort of, I guess when they were like, we really need the audience to know where we are for this to make sense.
I like that they showed the bird of prey, the underside of the bird of prey, because it is kind of, it's awesome, but silly at the same time.
With the painting, with the TOS painting style. And we got to see that in Picard as well, because there's that whole sort of subplot where there's the pirate guy who has a bird of prey, and then they get new engagement with that. That was pretty, a pretty cool part.
And that's why Klingons have they don't call it stealth.
Cloaking device.
They took like a Romulan bird of prey or whatever.
Well, so...
Is this whole thing a whole sketchy scenario?
No, it's not sketchy. Some of it is headcanon, or, they definitely talk about this in more detail in some of the novels, but what happened was in Star Trek III, right? In Star Trek III, the original plot was that Christopher Lloyd's character was going to, he was a renegade. He wasn't agreeing with the Klingon High Command, which had agreed and signed the treaty with the Federation and other groups to steer clear of Genesis and only go there for science, right? For the Genesis planet. This is all from Star Trek II. If you're listening to this podcast, you're probably aware of all these things. The original script had Christopher Lloyd's character. Since he was going rogue, he stole a Romulan bird of prey in order to get to Genesis, because he wanted to get the secret of Genesis, because he wanted to use it to make the Klingons strong, right?
Because Genesis does what Nintendo don't, right?
Precisely.
Okay.
16-bit. Better sound processor.
Yep.
Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah.
Sega.
Altered Beast?
Could have been better.
Wise from your grave.
Golden Axe, timeless.
Golden Axe is tight. But so anyway, what happened was in Star Trek III, as the production moved along, they dropped the idea of him stealing a Romulan ship and just decided, okay, he's flying a Klingon ship, but they never changed the name. And some people argue they didn't really change the design either, because, that style of bird of prey, which became ubiquitous in later Star Trek, it replaced the D7 battlecruiser, like TOS style Klingon ships. At the time, I think it was meant to be more of a Romulan design. That's the direction they were going. But anyway, that's why Klingons all of a sudden had cloaking devices.
When I said shady, you used a better word, which I think was headcanon, which was basically saying like they kind of made it fit, but
it was a weird production thing that like not even a mistake or an oversight maybe, or even if you can call it that, but people had to come up with an explanation. Right. So the explanation was that at some point the Klingon, and they might have even codified this in I honestly can't remember if they codified this in on screen at some point, that the Klingons and the Romulans had some sort of peace agreement for a while against the Federation. It seems unlikely, but what are you going to do?
So before I brought up the whatever point I brought up, you were talking about Boimler.
Boimler,
more like Bombastular. I can't even remember the nicknames they came.
Well, this is another example where they put him in a position. I'm sad that they didn't keep up that joke of always calling him something different in a different episode.
Yeah, and the first few episodes
they didn't know his name.
The nudity thing kind of died out too.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll come back, but I guess it can be
next
overplayed.
Second season.
Yeah, so rooting for scenes. Full on dick. Boimler penis.
I noticed that when they did the thing where they're relaxing by unbuttoning the top button of their uniform, so they were wearing like normal t-shirts underneath, so it looked a little bit more relaxed. But I swear in Star Trek, like TNG is the first I can think of, when they unbutton that top butt, it's butt. Unbutton that butt.
Top butt.
When they unbutton the top button, it's still just more uniform. Unless they are wearing a shirt underneath that looks like the uniform.
That uniform started in Star Trek II.
People aren't naked.
And it is just a flap.
And so it's not actually more relaxing because you're still wearing that neck-tight uniform.
Yeah, because they have that turtleneck with the ridged collar underneath.
People don't ever get nude in the future. They always have more uniform on underneath.
Yeah.
Except when Kira was on that planet trying to build that stuff to save the planet, because there was that old guy. Wasn't there? There was some old guy who was being stubborn about leaving.
Oh, that fucking episode.
And she didn't. She was wearing some kind of normal blouse. Do they wear blouses in the future? I don't think it was a blouse.
It's just your normal everyday Bajoran blouse.
Tunic. Yeah. Maybe it is tunic. Some sort of tunic.
I think that's good. That's a. Everyone's coming up with all these good words.
I think it was a blouse. I think it was a blouse.
But
what I was going to say is that Boimler is consistently being put in the position to go against what his natural inclination would be, or at least what he would perceive his natural inclination to be, in that now he has to denigrate his senior officers that he idolizes, mm-hmm. right? He has to denigrate them in order to save them. Now, he's doing it for a good reason and all that, but this has happened in multiple previous episodes too, where he ends up having to do the thing that he doesn't want to do, like help Fletcher get a promotion, for example, you know, and lie about Fletcher's involvement so they can get rid of him. That's the efficient way to get rid of Fletcher, for example. Just going against that, and in the process, presumably, you know, learning a little bit about himself and how the real world sometimes works and how difficult it can be to live the Star Trek style idealized Wesley Crusher, you know, philosophy. And I think that's the point of that Boimler character in a lot of ways, is to emphasize that if you have somebody who tries to follow all the rules to a T, as, you know, some fans out there might complain that a lot of Star Trek characters don't follow the rules. If you idolize Starfleet, this fictional Navy, you idolize them and their processes. Well, here's what happens if you try to follow that all the time, right? It's not good. You're going to find yourself in situations where you have to abrogate the rules in order to do the morally correct thing, as we've discussed on previous episodes.
So, right. And this is the first time he really makes that admission that because, you know, from the very first episode when he was talking about how all the personal logs he was making, yeah. and then Freeman's like, that's too many logs. and so he's actually admitting that, you know, in order to be the, tippity toppity, you gotta have your foibles.
You gotta have some foibles.
You gotta have some foibles.
You gotta have some foibles.
You gotta have a wine voice.
You got a wine foible.
Wine foible.
Foible wine.
This is one of our nicest event silos.
Yeah.
It was another great line. The concept of event silos.
He only reserved the event silo for 22 minutes.
And by the way, when the guy.
That's funny. That is true. That is funny that it's like a silo, because it is. Because in Star Trek VI, in that court scene, it's like, mm-hmm. they're going up so tall. Yeah.
And we see it again, that there's a scene like that in Enterprise as well. It mimics the same type of scene.
Yeah.
And by the way, when the guy with the clipboard, the events manager, comes in and tells him that you only reserved it for 22 minutes, it's exactly 22 minutes into the episode.
Yeah. So this is another one of those. This is one of those episodes where it's in real time.
Yes.
You know, because then that's generally how these trial things work. I mean, I guess you assume that as long as the clip you're watching of the character's recollection, you've got to assume that's how long it takes them to tell the story, and they're not like making it go longer. But yeah, that's one of them things where it's in real time. So yeah, that was going that judge guy. He wasn't. He was just some dude. He's like, I don't know him.
And, you know, it was a great conclusion to the episode. You know, you might have guessed that it was going to go in some different direction than we expected, but just to have a bunch of party balloons, to have the guy with the clipboard coming in, to have the unetched wall, and the guy upset that we haven't even gotten to any etching yet, because the whole point was to etch all their, like, you know, heroic stuff onto the wall. I really liked the guy who everyone thought was the judge, and he's just like, no, I'm just bringing my daughter's cake. my granddaughter's cake.
My little girl, she's 100. Yeah.
She's 100 years old.
So what? My favorite exchange was then, of course, between Mariner and Klar at the end. And I played it several times. I listened to each one. She goes, you held us in contempt of eels. You dipped us in eels. Those were eels you dipped us in. You did that. You did it. And he just keeps going, you ruined my party. You ruined my party. You ruined my party. She's so mad, and she's just so feels like
it was really great.
And they're both so mad. That's probably one of my favorite exchanges.
And that's the magic of Kurtwood Smith. He is such a great actor, but he has fun with it. He has so much fucking fun with it.
He goes from this intimidating sort of character that's gonna fuck your shit up to like, you ruined my party, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he said, I mean, like,
all whining.
I already said it, petulant. But I mean, you may go uneeled for now. Yeah. The line reading on that is genius.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great fucking line, and I will get a bucket of eels and put my children in there.
And Yeah, yeah. I want to hear how that goes.
I'm not even going to do it for punishment.
You can eat the eels afterwards.
Yeah, because...
You can eat those fucking eels.
Eel pie. I want to try some eel pie.
Eel pie?
So eel pie in London, in the Thames...
Do they do that? Is it after it's full of blood?
No, I don't know.
Is that how they make blood pie?
No, blood
pie.
Blood pudding? No, they make blood pudding with blood.
Yeah, I've had that actually with, it's like you can taste
the Germans make that too, and some of the Vietnamese and a number of other
you're
cultures.
You're changing the story from the eel pie. Let's talk about the eel
Well,
pie.
I was just going to say the blood pudding, it's like a sausage patty, which has a consistency that's a mix between meat and scabs. Yeah. That's basically
that's
how
That's precisely what it
yeah,
is.
That's so weird, man.
It's all mixed. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, eel pie. Sorry.
My understanding, and please, listeners, write in if I've gotten anything wrong or if I've missed out any... clever, cute little tidbits about this.
Anybody in the British part of the world?
Particularly in England or London in particular, because by all accounts, and
you
I've researched bile. This extensively in my research of eel sex, I also discovered that the Thames used to be just overflowing with eel.
Yeah, yeah,
and totally. Eels, eel pie used to be, you know, like you know, sort of like, you know, any sort of other savory pie that you might get England style with some meat in it or mince, different types of things that you could put into the pie and make a savory pie. The eel pie was very common. I was about to say popular, but I think not necessarily popular.
What century are we talking?
I don't know, long ago. 1600s, 1700s.
Probably like most of them until like heavy.
Yeah,
heavy industrial use.
Because I wonder if, yeah, I wonder if that ever made anyone sick because they're getting some like,
well,
some
apparently
dirty water creature.
Apparently, it went out of style because, as Jesse is indicating, as the industrialization took hold and the Thames became more polluted, it fouled the eels.
After it wasn't just a bunch of poo poo, heavy chemicals and shit.
But so eel pie, for a variety of reasons, went out of style. I think partly because maybe there were fewer eels, or the eels were just filled with chemicals and feces.
Chemicals and feces.
Poor people, people living in poverty, didn't want to eat it anymore.
I'm sorry.
They migrated from out in like the Sargasso or something.
Yeah.
I thought you were saying that it became filled with poor people. The eels became, I'm sorry.
No, no, the eels didn't, the poor people became filled with eels.
Yeah.
And that gets aggravating. Just like in Maine, how they used to feed lobster to prisoners because there's so many fucking lobsters.
Right.
It was just cheap
bugs.
It was poor people food, you know. Now it's rich people food, and that's what's happened with eels because now, apparently, I haven't investigated this in person because we're not allowed to leave the country anymore.
Yeah.
Apparently, eel pie is sort of coming back into style amongst the connoisseurs.
But it's fine.
You know, it's a pie crust shoved filled with eels.
Yeah.
And cooked. I don't see what's wrong with that. Yeah. I like eel sushi.
It probably has a nice sauce or something.
Is eel sushi, is that unagi?
I don't know, but that's good though. I like that. It's like smoked eel.
Yeah,
that's
smoked eel. Stuff. I know the Germans do a good smoked eel.
Yeah, it is freshwater eel.
Unagi.
Yep.
Freshwater eel.
I know a guy.
It's got eels.
I know a guy who said that he would go fishing for crappie in the Potomac. I don't know if he was just fucking with me, but there's a fish called the crappie.
Yeah, no, the crappie is.
Yeah, the crappie. Yeah. No, I mean, I didn't think he was fucking with me about like the fish, but it's just like
crabeye from Dunland.
But like, do you think would
that's,
you
that's
eat
a different book?
Would you eat? I mean, I guess Potomac is fine. You know, I don't know if I would eat fish from there though.
No. I might.
It's pretty. I used to work next to it, and it looks pretty dirty.
I would eat a fish.
When it was raining, it stunk, and there was garbage
all
in the lake.
You better cook
the
fuck out of that fish.
Audience, the Potomac River,
the Potomac,
large body of water that separates Virginia from Maryland, and D.C. Is along the Potomac.
And also, D.C.
That's a footnote. That's a footnote. Yeah, I wouldn't. I would maybe eat one fish. I would not regularly eat fish from the Potomac.
Yeah, over time you get fucked up.
Don't go swimming in the Potomac either. No, I mean, there's certain spots where it's okay, but it's a bigger river than it seems, and it's a Russian river.
Yeah, it wouldn't be that safe.
People get pulled under every year.
Yeah. So eel pie. So we talked about eels because they had the eel. Eel pail. You're talking about the tall silo because that's funny that they had the silo.
The event silo where he got married. Silo.
Yeah, he got married there. That's right.
Okay.
Captain Clarity.
Or one great reference, a deep poll was very early on in the episode when they're having a discussion over who's like the coolest person from Star Trek history.
Yeah. Oh, right.
And apparently Boimler is super into Roga Danar. And that's from TNG's The Hunted, which is season 3, episode 11, I believe. And it's a great episode.
That's who everyone Boimler wants to be, is this guy.
Well, he's sexy. He's got nice hair. And he's not wrong. I mean, he did the whole plot of the episode is that he is, I won't go into all the details or spoilers, but the long and the short of it is he's being chased by this alien group. And I believe the alien group is wants to get in the Federation, and he's trying to say that they're assholes. And, but he seems like he's kind of an asshole too. And so the whole episode, you're trying to figure out who's the asshole, and he's keeps escaping from everybody, from the Enterprise D, from those people. Like, he takes over, like, they send a ship to try to, like, kidnap him, and he ends up taking over that ship, you know. So he is a rascally charming, and if you look up his picture, he's a sexy, sexy looking guy.
But it's a classic argument of, like, you know, you got two people arguing, like, which is best or whatever, and then you have one person that's like, well, it's obviously Hulk Hogan's the best, and the other person is like, well, actually, because they know all this about wrestling,
it's the Iron
like,
Sheik.
It's, yeah, it's like, this. If you look at this body of work, blah, blah, blah. But in the end, and it's like, you make a good point, but you're trying to show off your knowledge, and the fact remains, whether you think so or not, it's Hulk Hogan, you know what I mean? Which is Khan, of course, being Hulk Hogan.
And Tendi all talking about his burly chest.
Oh, yeah, right. Oh, I remember Kurtwood Smith, I didn't think of Red Foreman. I didn't think of Red Foreman at all when I was watching it. I think a couple times it popped into my head because I was like, that's Red Foreman, but it was just goes to... Goes
he didn't
to,
talk about kicking anyone's ass or anything.
It's just very believable when you sometimes I'll watch, you know, something with a voiceover actor, and even if they're great actors, still just sort of think of them and their character. And I thought it blended really well.
I mean, and again, it's not a knock, but I'm right there with you. For example, with Billups, I know Paul Scheer so well, and Paul Scheer has such a unique visage with his gap in front of his tooth.
Yeah, he was the one that built playgrounds as a prank.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah,
in Parks
boom,
and Rec.
Kaboom, yeah. Kaboom it on Parks and Recreation.
Yeah.
So I'm just very familiar with him. So his voice is unique. His face is unique. You put those two things together and it can be hard to separate. Kurtwood Smith, you could say he's got a unique face and he's got a unique voice, but he does inhabit the character. He changes it enough. The first run through, I did not immediately catch on that this was Kurtwood Smith. And I'm a huge Kurtwood Smith fan. It would be as if it was Sam Neill and I didn't recognize it was Sam Neill. As unthinkable as that could be.
I still can't believe it.
It took me well into the episode where it suddenly clicked in my head. I was like, wait a second. And part of that was, I think he was hamming it up. I mean, he was really having a good time with his character, which is awesome.
So I guess they pointed out, you know, why it seemed like a trial, because they said, because he did use the word witnesses. He used the word testify. But it's when they brought up the word trial, that's what the trigger was for him to say, no, it's not that. The beam of celebration that holds him still.
But you'd have witnesses like at a wedding, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
You testify at church?
Yeah, I guess, you know, that's... And trial is, there's really no argument about the word trial.
It's either that or it's you're running a race.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah, or
something
like fighting that. Someone to the death.
Yeah.
Ealing somebody to the death.
Yeah, that's that's for Eel.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of anything. She was like looking at the judge and all. Yeah, they've all been pointed out, but the only thing that was really you can't argue with is why was there the Eel chamber that he was
culture,
he
man
that, but culture, that's you just write it off as culture. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And when you think about it, I mean, you know, my background's in anthropology, and one of the fun things about anthropology is it really drives home the idea that the things you take for granted are seen as insane by other people. For example, when a lot of East Asians, for example, first encounter cheese, they're like, what the fuck is wrong with you people? This is some like old curdled milk cube thing, and it smells like feet, which it does, because a lot of cheeses have the exact same bacteria as feet. Meanwhile, a lot of Western folks will encounter fish sauce and be like, what the fuck is this the first time, you know? Yeah. I'm glad that those...
distinct
those,
smell.
That those particular examples are eroding, but, you know, that happens all the time. Or another example I like is how in a lot of Western cultures, when you, you know, have to blow your nose, you're supposed to blow it into a tissue or a handkerchief. And a lot of other cultures think that's disgusting, that you're just sort of forcefully squirting goop out of your nose and smooshing it all around your nose and then putting it in a piece of paper. Whereas they will, like, you know, spit, you know, blow it out onto the ground so they don't actually have to touch their nose.
Or like the Chinese, I think, had the first toilet paper, and the people of other people in Asia that had contact with the Chinese, and they were like, this Chinese people are weird. They're wiping their asses with fucking paper.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
What the fuck is that? Like, why don't they use some water or something?
Yeah, water and a sponge. Or something. And by the way, now we know that toilet paper is like not that great for your bunghole.
Yeah, it's not.
Now every fucking podcast, by the way, is pushing the bidet attachments, because you can get these bidet attachments.
We wouldn't have known if it wasn't for coronavirus.
It's much nicer.
I mean, I'm down for the bidet.
Yeah, I'm down for the bidet.
Because it's the baby wipe thing is great, except for
expensive.
It's expensive.
It'll dry your shit out down
and it clogs, and it also clogs up the toilets if you flush them. So the other option is just to have a trash bag, a basket full of shitty baby wipes until you get around to throwing them away.
Right.
So
bidet all the way.
All the way bidet.
All bidet.
All bidet. All day bidet all the way.
So
this is just one experience it's purely anecdotal, so whatever. But I was at work and I was saying there was this guy, he's from Nepal, and he was leaving.
Is his name Paul?
No, he's from Nepal.
So he's not Paul from Nepal.
No, his name is Ram. And so
makes more sense, but a little disappointing.
Yeah. So right. Sorry to have a shitty name for a person that exists in real life.
What did he say though?
Oh,
is he a Buddhist?
I don't want to get into all. Actually, I think he leaned more.
What's his address?
He leaned more
can you
Buddhist.
Tell us where he lives.
And I don't know how to pronounce it. I think it's pronounced it. Everyone, I think it's commonly pronounced as Shankar, or some people. Everyone always called him Shankar, and it's probably something else. He leaned more Hindu, I think. But anyways, Ram was leaving, and he was saying, "Hey, see you later, buddy." And we were gonna shake hands, and I was holding something in my right hand, so I was gonna do it with my left hand. And he was like, "No, man, don't. Mm-hmm. That's not cool." Like, and he wasn't actually offended, you know, because he understood that I'm his friend, and I just wasn't aware. But he was just like, "I won't do that, man." He's like, "What? It's left hand." He's like, "No, man, it's just not right. You're not supposed."
It's probably
to do
not a cultural thing. He just probably was weirded out that you had like a handful of feces.
Yeah.
And then you were trying to use your other hand to like awkwardly shake his hand if you were shaking hands with Bob Dole.
I thought he knew the deal though, you know, with the feces hand. But
I
don't know, isn't there, I always was reading like that people, you know,
there are a lot of cultures.
The left hand is meant for dirty things.
In Islam, for example, that's very common, but it's common in other cultures as well. And by the way, I recall being in Korea once, traveling around, and I'm left-handed, and I'm very adept with chopsticks, but I use them with my left hand.
They're like, "Get the fuck out of here!"
No, nobody was rude about it, but people stared, and some people laughed, and
oh, that's fucked up.
Well, I think it was a combination.
They laughed.
No,
I can understand them staring because they're just kind of like, "Oh, that's."
That cultural interaction is funny because nobody was an asshole to me, but I was doing something that was unusual by using my left hand.
Well, right, of course.
And not unheard of. I don't think nobody uses their left hand. But
yeah,
I think,
not saying they're all pieces of shit. I just think like the laugh, it's to
but
chuckle.
But in addition,
like,
I was also in an area of the country where tourists don't frequent. I was also just gobbling the fuck up out of some super spicy kimchi and some hot soup that had some octopus floating around in it. And so I think there was just a whole host of curiosities.
That soup was
them.
That octopus's garden.
That
soup in the sea.
The word sinister comes from a Latin word that means left-handed.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's a Western reference.
Lucifer sat on the left side of God.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Anyway, my people have been, we deal with a fair amount.
Your people.
Mainly the scissors.
Oh.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Most everything else is okay. The scissors is a fucking catastrophe.
I don't know how you get by with arcade games and driving cars.
That's no problem. No problem at all. I even play golf right-handed, but I can drive a car. I can shift gears like a motherfucker.
Well,
but,
I mean, yeah, you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's not really a left or right thing.
I don't know. I'm thinking about it now. I'm just like, go. Which is weird because in all the other countries where they have the stick on the left side because they drive on the other side.
Well,
I guess that's just one's definition of what is the dominant hand used for? Apparently the dominant hand is used for the wheel there, whereas us, the dominant hand is used for the majority dominant hand. I'm not saying that all left-handed people are.
See what I have to deal with here? I've known Dan for decades.
That's just driving.
That was fucked up on me. So is the dominant hand supposed to be used for this? Is your dominant hand, should it be used for the stick shift or the wheel?
I think it depends on what kind of car you're driving.
I don't think it has anything to do with the kind of car you're driving.
If you're used to using the shifter with one hand because your wheel is on one side of the car, then that's what's normal. If you go to England and the wheel's on the other side of the car, then it's weird.
But if you ask somebody who's right-handed to throw a baseball, they're always going to use their right hand, and they will always catch with their left. Or is that not true? Do some people catch with their right hand when they're right-handed?
I don't think I know how to catch or throw. So.
That's so beside the point, but fair enough.
I think I'll change it up each time.
I get the message. This is not going anywhere.
You got the message.
That's a good point. So about the Vulcan thing, how you were bringing up how they had to steal a Vulcan ship, and then they pointed that out at the end. Specifically, they pointed out the Vulcan thing. It's like, why didn't they ask the Vulcans?
Yeah.
Where did they get the ship, and why did they get the Cerritos to do it, and not someone else? Yeah. And specifically, that whole scene was just thrown in there.
It's classified.
Yeah. So.
All right. Any closing thoughts on this episode? Again, for me, it was the most complete, the most interesting. Mm-hmm. I've really enjoyed all the episodes to varying degrees, some stronger than others. This one, I think, was really firing on all cylinders, and I really had a good time with it.
Yeah, I love the from the very start. I liked those when they went in the dungeon. When they said it was like they put us in a jail cell or whatever. And he's like, it's more like a dungeon.
Yeah.
But I like the first clue was those bars, because it wasn't your normal
sideways bars.
It was sideways jagged spike bars that just kind of like went together like a monster jaw. And but I agree. I think this was packed full of stuff. I really appreciated that. I truly didn't fully like get my shit together with it until a second viewing, and I could watch it a third time and still probably get more from it. I'm sure there's tons of people there who are like, LOL, I got it on the first try. Well, good for you.
LOL.
LOL.
Fuck you, Dan.
Yeah, I'm stupid, but I'm just creating this person. Oh, it's just ready to counter someone that you can't counter. You can't just yell at me and call me stupid. I already called myself stupid.
I like there were two really little subtle things that I wanted to bring up before closing out the show. The first is mega subtle, which was when they were on the cloaked Romulan bird of prey, and then Rutherford, resets again, hits his head on the controls and starts the warp engine, right? There's a brief moment where this is hard to describe, but it's where the stars sort of blur out in a beautiful way. I mean, it was a sci-fi beautiful, like the ship zooms away and the colors and the stars. It was just a very effective cinematography choice. And I think the show does a lot of that, and more so as the season has progressed. We've been seeing more kind of cool space shots. The shot with the four Romulan warbirds was another one, not quite as cinematic, but it
was effective.
And in the widescreen, you feel the scale. You feel the scale of those ships, which was cool. The other thing I really liked was, because we often like to touch on the music, and the music was good for the most part, but there was one thing that stood out to me, which was when Rutherford wakes up at the Gorn planet. There's these TOS stings, these little musical stings that are pure TOS,
right?
That were done really well. Keep an eye, but it's brief, and I think that's the key to keeping this nice, is add those things in, but don't overdo it. You know, I'm sure there are points in time where maybe overdoing it will make sense from the story perspective. But from here, that little TOS sting before we see the Gorn, it puts us in the TOS mindset before we see the Gorn, and then we see the Gorn wedding. So another little subtle thing that really helps with the world building and the vibe building for this series.
I don't think that this was necessarily any kind of subtle reference to anything, but it was kind of in that same scene where he hits his face on the keyboard or whatever, the console. He says, it was like upgrading Klingon fonts. That's what put him out, was upgrading Klingon fonts. And I don't know if
why would I need to know that?
Yeah, unless it was some kind of reference to a bird of prey and Klingon thing, but probably not. It probably was, I don't know. It's just,
that's a good question. But, yeah, I it's a good point. I hadn't really considered what that might be.
But so just to sort of summarize, I guess what happened then is, so
summarize
they, so
and
they,
strategize they got, what's going to happen with your fries.
They're going to go in my eyes, and I'm going to die. So they got the neutral zone map. They used that neutral zone map And they stole the Romulan bird of prey and used that map to like find out where the Romulus to get to the. They needed that to get to Romulus. They needed the map to get to Romulus. They didn't know where Romulus was.
It could have. Yeah, I don't know exactly. Maybe they needed the map to find a way the route in to avoid the sensors.
It wasn't a paper map. It was some sensors. Kind of. It was one of those digital papers.
Digital rollout papers.
Where it updated itself. And then in the end, they got the package, and the package turned out to be Klarn, because he had been captured by the Romulans, and that's why he was interested in all that stuff, because he's trying to find out more, as much info as he can about why he got captured, and he threw him a party, and the Lower Deckers ruined his party. Yeah. So that's pretty much it. At first, I was like, that was a bunch of stuff.
He set up his own party to fail.
Yeah,
I mean, come on. 22 minutes.
You can definitely make that argument, and I think
maybe the planet was at a bunch. The whole thing about that planet is there's a bunch of event silos and they're all booked up, and it's like that's part of their culture. It's like, you got to get in there, and like, oh, all I could get was 22 minutes. I just got rescued from the fucking Romulans, but all I could get was 22 minutes.
It's a good point. I was like trying to book a wedding venue or book the trampoline place for your children.
Yeah.
I booked an event silo for 22 minutes, and all I got was this stupid T-shirt or something. Stupid something else.
All I got was a bunch of dumbass ensigns.
A stupid horn of Kandor.
Yeah.
Kandar. All right. So that does it for us this week. Party. We now enter the mode, the phase.
Enter mode. Crazy.
Where we tell you how to get to us on, you know, like email and Twitter and social media and stuff.
Da, 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 da. It's got Star Trek.
And Dan is working on the new theme song.
That's great.
He's doing a good job.
Da, 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 da. Feedback at itsgotstartrek.com.
Very good. Feedback at itsgotstartrek.
That was the best one yet.
That is the best one. The most succinct. that's how you email us. You can derive from that that our website is www.itsgotstartrek.com. You can find us there on the net, on the information superhighway.
I think this podcast is going to win one of those potty awards.
Yeah.
Potty.
At the potties.
I like that you said information superhighway, because, you know, nobody says that anymore.
I know. Because they're not cool.
People haven't said that since like 1998.
Social media. We got social media. Dan's activating his robot.
I was going to bring that and I didn't because I'm an asshole.
Yeah. After the podcast is over, we usually spend about 4 or 5 hours jamming on synths. That's what you miss out on. That's going to be on the Patreon behind the scenes.
Analog ribbons.
Yeah. If you pay $1,000 a month pledge on Patreon, you can get access to the multi-hour synth jams. Occasionally with singing involved.
And it's Patreon, so Dan's going to be naked.
Yeah, what? Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I didn't agree to that.
Yeah, Dan's going to be completely naked, jamming out on that thing. We can post a blurred clip onto Twitter. If people want to see a blurred clip of your penis on Twitter, where do they find us, Dan?
At my place. That's where you find us. Is at my place when I blur my penis with paint.
Hashtag
I put blur
place.
Paint on my penis. I don't know where you find a blurred picture of my penis.
We can find an unblurred picture.
Unblurred picture. Oh. Oh, well, in that case.
Google.
Dan's unblurred penis.
Oh, that's like something at a Fight Club.
Oh, no.
But what's the Twitter? What's the Twitter address?
It's like one of them Bobby cars from from England.
Oh, you mean a police car? They still call them police cars.
I think I don't have the tone and the delay right. But
yeah, or the rhythm.
You can eat it, Buster Brown.
or the tenor.
Oh man.
Or the timbre.
Fucking me.
Timbre.
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 Just call me Danny Timbre.
Timbre. Timber Tamber.
Danny Tamber.
What was the question?
Amber Tamblin.
We talked about David Cross.
Yeah, we were talking
about Amber Tamblin.
Pre-podcast, we were talking about David Cross, who was married to Amber Tamblin, who was in the sisterhood of the Traveling Pants and House MD.
And he
she's
was in
much
a,
younger than he is.
And he was the alien, one of those aliens in Rick and Morty that was really uncomfortable by nudity male nudity.
He was uncomfortable by nudity and he had an appointment to get his butthole flaps looked at.
Yeah.
My kids love that. That's my favorite. Kids love whenever that's David really Cross has butthole flaps.
Yeah. Was now
I'm a bad parent.
Is that episode where those aliens were there two different sexes for those aliens, or were they all just like the same sex?
No, there were. I think there were different sexes.
So, do you think they were uncomfortable by all nudity or just like same sex nudity?
I don't know.
You should get your kids to watch the Chappelle Show.
Yeah.
Be a really bad pair.
Yeah. No, that, maybe they could learn some stuff from the Chappelle show.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right.
It's probably
so,
pretty tame by
now. Now, the question was, this happens every week. This is wild. The question was, we got the website and we got the email. That part we got.
The email.
The email.
The Twitter.
We need the Twitter.
What's it? What is it, Jesse?
Instagram.
Oh, I don't know.
You know it. Just take a guess.
You can do it.
It's so straightforward.
It's got Star Trek.
Yeah, but what is the first thing? The first thing before It's Got Star Trek.
For social media. What do you have to put in front of a social media thing?
You got to put like a one of those symbols.
Close enough. Yes. At It's Got Star Trek.
It's an at symbol, yeah.
At It's Got Star Trek on Twitter and Instagram, and you can find us on Facebook.
Just pretend it's like an email, like feedback at itsgotstartrek.com, but take away the feedback and the .com, and you just have just at itsgotstartrek.
And we do really try to interact with folks. We have a lot of fun talking.
Interact with folks.
Yeah, we talk to a lot of folks on the Twitter and the Facebook, and you know, not so much on the Instagram, but we're there. We post everything there.
Okay,
so
next time.
Like
at itsgotstartrek.
I'm just razzing you.
I'm just razzing you. Next time I'm going to get it.
44th episode.
This is part of the bit we do at the end, right? Where I'm clueless and you guys are annoyed.
Part of the bit where Jesse is sundowning.
Wait, what's happening?
No, I don't know that.
Like, hey, I didn't say that.
I wasn't paying attention.
Who are you? Where are my car keys? Who put them in the freezer?
Yeah.
All right.
Somebody answer that phone.
So thank you very much.
Oh, and then Facebook, It's Got Star Trek.
Yeah, Facebook. I said Facebook.
Oh, but okay.
Obliquely. Anyway, people, you can find. We're very, very popular on Facebook. We're very popular on Twitter. Come join the rest of your friends who are heading to us on Twitter and Facebook.
Like and subscribe.
So yeah, like and subscribe and do all that other stuff. And you know, oh, and we're on Amazon Music now. Amazon Music started doing podcasts,
fuck
so you
yeah.
can find us there, or you can just ask your Alexa.
Watch us on your local
podcast dealer.
We are on Google Play, so you can ask your Google Home Assistant or whatever they're calling it now, Nest Assistant. You can ask Amazon. You can ask your wife or your husband, your boyfriend. You can ask people. Play, you know, just be like, play the It's Got Star Trek podcast, and somebody
like,
whether robot or human will respond and help you out.
And if it's a person and they don't know, it's your lucky day because you get to blow their mind.
Never heard of it.
Yeah. And you can spread this around. You know, we advise send a link to the podcast to your boss.
You get to blow his mind if he or she has never heard of
it. Ex-lovers are really into this podcast. A huge proportion of our podcast demographic is actually ex-lovers.
I did a bad thing. I said boss and he, and then I quickly corrected myself and said he or she, and that was fine.
Well, there you go. That's the the institutionalized gender biases that we all deal with. No, that's the point. As long as we're trying, we have to try to get
better.
But
at a certain point, you got to get it.
We got to break out of those habits. Yeah, but they're deep habits.
After a while, I mean, come on already.
They're deep habits. You know, they do get in there, but good on you for correcting and not assuming that somebody's boss would indeed be male. You gotta fix
that. Just use the word they. They is the way to go, right?
Yeah, well, it depends. People,
yeah, it depends.
What about those people?
That should be avoided.
That's not good.
Generally speaking, that is not interpreted.
Those decent fellows. That's better.
Man. Those fellows.
That's better.
Not those. Not those maids. Just those fellows.
Oh boy.
Not maids.
Those good folks.
All right. So we're going to
make like a fart and come out the butt.
I was going to say
don't do that.
I was going to say that we're going to all go spend the next week working on ourselves and trying to continue to reduce the amount of inherent gender, class, racist bias in our things. But what Dan said is
day by day thing
is equally valid. Mm. So next week,
so buttons,
we will be discussing Lower Decks episode 9. We don't know what it's called yet. Again,
they just
are not telling us what the episodes are called.
That's episode 45.
That will be episode 45 of the podcast. It'll be episode 9 of Lower Decks.
You got it.
If you need more It's Got Star
I'm
Trek, don't worry. We've got 43 episodes before this, We do all of Picard. And then beyond that, we did all the Star Trek pilots for every single show, including the animated series. And then we jump around and we have episodes focused on every series. Deep Space Nine, Next Generation, Voyager, Enterprise, Discovery.
Less Discovery, because that's harder to do.
Discovery is harder to do, yeah. So we only have a couple episodes on Discovery. But
next week, there'll be 44 previous episodes to listen to.
Yeah.
43. Yeah. That's the amazing thing about moving forward.
And there's the one episode
time.
That no one's heard.
Oh, and we have a secret bank episode.
We keep teasing that one.
Yeah, that's just in the bank for when we get tired or there's a, sort of a national... there has been a number of national... We give us credit. There have been a number of global and national catastrophes.
But there's going to be one
that's still
really
produce content.
Big.
Yeah, but if there's one big enough, that's when you'll get to hear
You can't
episode.
Have a Domingo. You remember that Chris Kattan sketch? You can't have a Domingo.
I don't remember that.
And he smacks... I think he smacks his butt. That's the banked good. Episode is like. You can't have that episode. You can't have that mango.
Yeah,
you can't
look up mango and SNL on YouTube.
No, I understand Chris Kattan, and he was on SNL,
I'm just telling the audience.
My brain recognizes
that. I'm not
that,
talking to you
right
now.
He was with Will Ferrell in the do 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 do. He was in the movie, but I don't have memories of Chris Kattan. They've been removed.
He also did that Mr. Peepers, and that also had Dwayne the Rock Johnson.
That I remember.
And Dwayne the Rock Johnson played Mr. Peepers' dad.
I don't remember it. Don't remember it.
Will Ferrell was in that sketch.
I remember. Dwayne the Rock Johnson being an awesome addition to Saturday Night Live on most occasions.
I don't know if my brain edited these memories out itself in some form of protection, some sort of suppressing the memory to protect my psyche.
Katana is a weird one.
Or possibly somebody else has gone around and monkeyed around it with my brain and resulted in
too
me
much, Mom.
Somebody's, doing that.
Somebody's trying to make a monkey out of you.
Somebody is trying to make a monkey out of me. Anyway, so that's going to do it for us this week. We'll see you next week. For episode 9 of Lower Decks in the future.
4 or 5. Episode
be,
4 or 5.
Discovery.
4
and
episode
more
4
random
or 5.
Episode. We're going to do more movies. People dig the Star Trek
4
6
plus
episode.
5 equals 9. Oh.
So we will see you next week. Any final thoughts? Anything you want to say goodbye? Anything clever?
I think I'm about done.
What kind of a noise annoys an oyster? A noisy noise annoys an oyster.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I've heard that before.
Yeah, I've heard that before as well. Did you come up with that? Is that in a book?
My dad told it to me, and I'm sure he got it from somewhere else.
It's in the oyster
book. But I don't know where it came from.
It came out of the oyster joke book.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking about oysters and eels, there used to be a lot of oysters around, too.
This podcast is making me hungry.
Yeah. I want some raw oysters.
I want an eel.
Some smoked eel.
I want
an
eel.
And a pile of lobsters.
You think they have an eel po' boy sandwich?
I hope they do.
Let's do that.
Is it redundant to say po' boy sandwich? It's just po' boy.
I think it's just po' boy.
A po' boy is a sandwich.
Yeah, a po' boy is a sandwich. It's
so
a subset of
that's
sandwiches.
That's a different podcast. It's got sandwiches.
It's got sandwiches.
And we're going to talk about eel.
That might be a YouTube series. That might be a long-running YouTube series.
That's a visual.
Where we develop and consume sandwiches on video and pretend like we like them.
Like, that's a good idea. No shit there. Like, that's a good... We should totally do that.
Jesse is very hungry.
Wait, then you want to hear this. You can't elope. What will your honey do?
All right, we'll see everybody.
I never wanted to hear that one.
We'll see everybody next week. I hope you have a good one. Bye-bye.
Oh, we got eels. There's eels over here.
Mariner's not lying. I was there. We didn't see a map.
Perhaps this is a misunderstanding. You may go uneeled for now.
Woohoo! Better luck next time, eels.